Intelligent design and DNA. Scholars can't explain it all away. Get ready to be awed by the handiwork of God. Tune in to Real Science Radio. Turn up the Real Science Radio.
Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. Welcome to Real Science Radio. I'm Bob Enyart.
And I'm Fred Williams, creation speaker and software engineer.
Fred, we don't talk about politics on this science show.
Not very often,
no,
if ever.
We don't too much.
But we have a kind of an election coming up, huh? Kind of a minor one.
Well, we do. And what we do every 4 years on Bob Enyart Live, the other days of the week, is we do a voter's guide.
The other days of the week, you're on at 3 o'clock.
Yeah.
Mountain Time.
In Colorado, 50,000 watts.
They can listen to it online, just like they can listen to our show.
Online.
Those are great
K-Gov.
Shows, too, by the way. Highly recommend them.
Thank you so much.
Theology Thursday is really good.
Yeah, I love
they're
that
all good.
Show. KGOV, KGOV.
Yep.
Gov is short for government, because all authority, government's authority, and all authority comes from God. It's kingdom authority.
Oh,
so
cool.
KGOV.com.
Okay.
And radio stations west of the Mississippi begin with the letter K. In East, they begin with W.
Yeah.
Like WABC.
So that's where
K-ABC.
That came from.
Yes.
Kingdom government.
Kingdom.
I like it.
Yes. Kingdom government, kingdom authority. So, voter's guide, 2016, BEL style.
BEL style. And where can they get this voter's guide?
Well, if you go to our website, rsr.org/voters-guide.
Voters-guide.
Yeah, it'll pop right up.
Yep.
So maybe we could share a little bit about it and then get to science. But, for example, for president, we point out that any candidate who admits he will kill some children is disqualified.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah. So people could figure that out. Also for U.S. Senate, representatives, local, state senators,
it's a
representatives,
disqualifier.
Mayors. If a candidate says, I support killing some Jews, I mean, I'm not all for the Holocaust, but I think some Jews
should be killed.
Or lynching some blacks because they're black, or killing some babies, that's murder, and so we need to oppose them. Jesus slammed the Herodians, even though Herod, that dynasty, they were murderers, but they thought, well, they're better than, you know, Caesar's crowd, but Jesus slammed the Herodians.
Yeah, so it'd be kind of like voting for Herod back then, right?
Yeah.
Kind of.
Yeah. So anyway.
Because he was the lesser of two evils, at least.
Yes.
That, yeah.
This is a science show, the lesser of two weevils.
Okay.
So anyway, for president, just make sure, or any other candidate, don't vote for anyone who admits they will kill some innocent people.
That's right.
Believe it or not, as Christians, we should oppose everyone who supports killing the innocent.
Yeah, absolutely.
And my child killer is always worse than the
Don't
other
compromise.
Guy's child killer.
So the next one, I really got a kick out of this one, Bob. It's retained judges, question mark. So the answer is either don't vote.
Don't vote whether or not you want to retain judges, because their replacements will only be worse.
Yeah.
They'll just be worse.
Yeah. Or vote no for the therapeutic value. Now, I like that one, because I always do vote no, but now I'm going to be thinking about your voter's guide. I'm going to go in there and go, no, 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 and I like it.
Right. It just makes you feel good to vote no on every judge.
Good.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and I've never thought of it as therapeutic value, but that's exactly what it is.
Yeah.
It's like a punching bag, because I always just said, no.
And then on the amendments in Colorado, like Amendment 69, the universal health care, single payer, you know, Hillary care, basically. Vote no, of course. It's socialism. And Amendment 70, we've got that.
Amendment 70, that's the minimum wage. Oh, yeah. That's
right.
Going to kill small businesses.
It's destructive. And Jesus said, is it not lawful for me to do what I will with my money?
Yeah.
That's in Matthew 20.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it is unlawful for a politician to tell you how to spend your money.
Yeah.
That's unlawful. It is lawful to tax people.
Yes, that is lawful.
Validated in the Bible. But this is another form of socialism.
It is, and it'll get rid of a lot of jobs.
Stealing.
Yep.
And because it's immoral, it backfires in horrific ways.
It does, yep.
And then the suicide euthanasia Proposition 106.
Yeah, obviously no.
No, because it's always wrong to intentionally kill the innocent.
Mm-hmm.
So you vote no on 106. And the others are pretty much all, shall taxes be increased for? And it's just,
yeah.
No.
Yeah. More therapeutic value, too.
And no. Yeah, it feels good. And then it says, I filled out my official Colorado ballot on the air. I voted in public.
Okay.
And I also invited other people to mail in their ballots to me, and I'll fill them out for them, too. I'm just kidding. But that's how absurd everything is.
Well, yeah. Did you get, like, 20 from dead people?
Yeah, right. I'm not a
Hey, my uncle died last year. Would you fill out his voting guide?
I'm not a Democrat.
Yeah, exactly. Like, 90% of the time, voter fraud is from, you know, why is it all dead people are Democrats? What is up with that?
Yeah, they die sooner. And at the end of the ballot, the official ballot, it says end of ballot. So we got that on our voter's guide. End of ballot, end of justice, end of freedom, end of sanity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's our voter's guide for 2016.
RSR.org/voter-guide.
Yes. Cool. All right. So, Fred, there is an interview in the latest Creation magazine, and it's of a geneticist.
Yeah, and the interview is conducted by Rob Carter. We've had him on the show. He's great. I love the stuff he's done.
He's a brilliant molecular biologist himself.
Yeah, and he works for CMI.
Yes.
So he's interviewing a guy that works for ICR.
Creation Ministries International out of Australia. Their molecular biologist is interviewing a scientist who works in Dallas for Henry Morris's group. Right, ICR, Institute for Creation Research.
That's right.
And what's this guy's name?
So this is Dr. Jeffrey Tompkins.
Yeah, but he's not a real geneticist, is he?
Oh, no. He only got his PhD from Clemson. And he actually, it sounds like he taught there. He was in the Department of Biochemistry and Genetics, and then he left there
at Clemson
to go to
University.
ICR. Yeah, at Clemson.
Yeah, and he's sharp. And I've heard him speak on this topic that's addressed in this interview, and I love it. It's the argument evolutionists use when they say that human DNA is 98.5% the same as chimps.
Yeah.
Which is obviously not.
Totally been refuted.
And that percentage has been dropping and dropping and dropping. We're not down yet at a banana or a sponge, but we're getting lower in the percent that's really the same. So they had to deal with one problem right off the bat because we have 23 chromosome pairs. 23 plus 23. Equals one, right?
Yeah.
One human being has these two pairs of 46 chromosomes.
46 total, 23 pairs.
Yeah, but apes have 24.
So they have 24, so or a total of 48.
Fred, if we're identical almost.
Yeah.
Oh, but then wait, remember the Y chromosome? That was so.
At least 30% different. It was so different, they called it horrendous.
Yeah, that's a scientific term. The human Y chromosome is horrendously different.
And it's horrendous because that thing doesn't change. It's very conserved, which means it's very functional.
All over the world from all human beings. It's
the ideal one to look at to prove that, you know, chimp man ancestry. You wouldn't expect there to be that kind of level of change in it. And there's a ton of it in there.
Yeah, between the humans and the chimps. In fact, they say they can't even align huge swaths of the chromosomes.
Yeah, yep.
Unalignable because they're not the same. Well, anyway, so that's one problem. But before that, they had just the basic number problem. We have 23 chromosome pairs. Apes have 24. So the evolutionists needed a way to fix the story.
Yeah, so they had to come up with a fusion event sometime in the past by some simian creature that's turning into eventually us and splitting off and turning into apes.
Yeah.
So they needed to have a fused chromosome, right?
In other words, two chromosomes that fused together, they became one.
So they go from 24 to 23, and voila, they've solved the problem, so they say.
So now to talk through this, and we're presenting what geneticist Dr. Jeffrey Tompkins has published, we're going to have to use some vocabulary. And the vocabulary won't be familiar to many people in the audience, but we'll explain it, and it'll be easy enough to follow along.
It's not too bad. Yeah, for example, telomeres, centromeres.
Not to mention cashmere.
Cashmere.
Sweaters.
That's a mere joke.
Well, it's a very mere joke.
Very.
But anyway, yeah, Fred, this vocabulary, I think as we're doing the story, we'll explain what a telomere is, what a centromere is, and it's pretty simple concepts.
Yeah, it is. From the tree view, it's pretty simple. So each chromosome has a cap on it, and it's called a telomere. And it's at both ends, and it helps stabilize the chromosome. And it's interesting, this thing's like an hourglass, because it loses a little bit of material each time the cell replicates. So
the telomere sort of shrinks from the end?
It shrinks from the end slowly over time. And if we could control that, we would live longer. I mean, it controls, it's like an hourglass of our age.
It seems like we may live longer, right?
If those,
so if I could picture this, your DNA, it has 3 billion base pairs, like a spiral staircase with 3 billion steps, a lot of steps.
Yeah.
But it's not just one long string in the nucleus of your cells. And we have trillions of cells.
Yeah.
So it's wound up on spools. And those spools are then folded. It's all astounding.
Astounding.
When you
really
watch an animation
design
of how it works, it's brilliant
really
beyond
cool.
measure. It's so fun to see God's handiwork and engineering. And so then as they're spooled up on these histone proteins, and then they're wrapped around, then they're folded, and they bunch up, the long strand of DNA bunches up into 23 pairs of chromosomes. And on the ends of those chromosomes are these telomeres.
Yeah.
And they keep getting shorter every time your cell divides.
Yeah.
Through mitosis. The cell divides, and you lose some of those telomeres on the ends of the chromosomes.
Yeah. I kind of use an analogy of like threads being slowly removed from a cap on your head, so you get your head, it isn't as warm. Eventually,
so
you really get cold and you die.
When it's cold out, eventually.
So cashmere wasn't far off, Bob.
Oh, yeah.
Cashmere cap.
Yeah.
There
right.
we go.
Okay. That's a mere joke. Very mere joke. Okay, so these telomeres that are shrinking, they're on the ends of the chromosomes, and that fits into the argument that the evolutionists are making for why they say two ape chromosomes merged into one.
Yeah, so they found, or so they thought, you know, and this is years ago, actually, on chromosome 2, they found a telomere, and they said, hey, this is where the two fuse together.
On the human chromosome number 2, out of the 23, on the second one, somewhere in the middle of it, they found what looked like stuff that should be on the ends.
Yeah, they found what looked like two connected telomeres.
So they said, Now, is it possible for chromosomes to fuse together or split apart? It turns out, with astounding research, that does happen. And it happens relatively rapidly in many organisms. Mm-hmm. This has been documented. It's not well known. I bet you 95% of the people listening to this show, Fred, even though they're science fans, they don't know that it has been documented that the number of chromosomes in species has changed.
Yeah.
You know, somewhat, it's not common, but it's not incredibly rare. But this claim, okay, so they're saying our second chromosome, somewhere in the middle of it, it's got the evidence of two ends that were fused together.
That's right.
That's their argument.
That's their argument. Now, this was back when we did not have the DNA sequenced at all. I mean, it was, so they were using ways that, you know, in a layman's term, they're estimating. They're doing this hybridization stuff. They're estimating what this area looks like. It's an educated guess. It's not a guesstimate.
So this was 1991. When thinking of the sequencing of the human genome, I think of Bill Clinton because of all his scams and frauds and all. Before his administration, he took office, right? He won in when?
1992.
And then who followed Bill Clinton? It was George W. Bush.
Yeah, in 2000.
So remember at the end of Clinton's second term, they announced, hey, we sequenced the human genome, Francis Collins, all
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, they weren't done, but Clinton wanted to get the credit for it. So it was a big fanfare, and they announced the completion of the human genome before it was completed.
Yeah, it really wasn't completed for a couple more years in 2002.
They didn't want George W. Bush to get the credit for it to be done under him. So anyway, but in 1991, before Clinton even took office, these were in the early years. Remember I debated Eugenie Scott, and she thought we knew everything there was to know about DNA. And this was 5-6 years before that interview. So this was early on.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, look, we got proof. The human chromosome 2 came from two different chimp chromosomes. And they said, well, we know these genes on this chimp chromosome and these genes on this other chimp chromosome. Look, we find them on the human chromosome 2. So these two fused together. That was their argument.
That was their argument.
So this is from Dr. Tompkins' article on the ICR website.
Okay.
So he said that in 2002, over 500,000 bases of DNA surrounding the fusion site were fully sequenced.
Oh, so this is right where they think they merged.
Yes.
Now,
so now we have the sequence.
Actual information.
Yeah.
We're not arguing from ignorance. Like the favorite fossil of an evolutionist is an incomplete fossil.
Yeah.
Because then they can imagine and tell the story.
Yeah, they can do all kinds of
things. It's always a wonderful story. That's their favorite fossil.
Yeah.
But here, too, their favorite fusion point is when we haven't sequenced it.
Yeah, and now we have the absolute hard data. And
cool.
So he goes on to say that it revealed that the alleged fusion sequence was in the middle of a gene.
Oh, boy.
Now, that gene was originally classified as a pseudogene.
You know,
welcome, Eugenie Scott.
Junk DNA.
Yeah,
right?
Because there's not yet any known function for it. So this is pre-Eugenie Scott.
Yeah,
you know,
right?
And you asked her, you know,
what's the best evidence for evolution?
And
she's
said
like
junk DNA. Yeah.
Because all this junk, it has no function. And in this case, they were saying all this DNA has no function.
Yeah, and you were predicting they would find function.
Yes, that was really fun. You know, Fred, we know how this is going to turn out. We haven't got to it yet, but the audience knows that when they say this is junk DNA, it's going to turn out it has an important function.
Exactly.
And it's like their arguments keep shrinking, like vestigial organs. They used to have over 100 in the human body that had no function. Now they've all got function. Or the retroviruses, which are now vital for reproduction. Or the incomplete fossil record, which is increasingly complete. And their arguments keep shrinking.
Well, you know, they have that Hollywood movie, I think it was called The Incredibly Shrinking Man or Woman or something.
Right.
So maybe in the future we'll have the incredibly shrinking theory of evolution.
Yes.
It's a hypothesis. It's not even a good hypothesis.
Yeah, there's increasingly nothing for Darwin to do.
That's right. Hmm. Anyways, he goes on to say the research also showed that the genes surrounding the fusion site in that 500,000 base window did not exist on chimp chromosomes 2A or 2B, which are supposed to be the two chimp chromosomes that fuse together. So they did not find any of those sequences on those. And they claimed back then, oh, these are identical or nearly identical to the chimp X and Y, you know, not with X and Y, but 2A and 2B chromosomes,
different
chromosomes.
So first of all, right where they say was the fusion site, they find it's right smack dab in the middle of this very important, what they thought was junk DNA. Now they know it's very important genetic information, and the genetic information is there, is not on the chimp chromosomes that supposedly fused together.
That's right.
For our chromosome 2.
And what's really cool is, I mean, this gene is super complex. It's involved in the production of at least 255 different cell types and tissues in humans.
What? Wait a minute. You mean the genetic material there in the fusion site is used to make how many different human cells?
At least 255 different human cells and tissues
and
in
different
humans.
Kinds 255. Of tissues. Well, this is really not important.
Yeah. Well, you know what else is cool about this? And this goes back to like stuff Dr. Kevin Anderson, who we've had on the show.
Another molecular biologist
who's a creationist. And he educated us on this whole thing about how the DNA can also be read backwards. And create a sequence based on that reading. It's incredible. It's like reading a book backwards, and it tells a completely coherent story.
Yeah.
It's
so
amazing.
So you read the DNA in one direction normally, but sometimes on the reverse strand, you read it backward. And it builds genes going backward.
It does.
It's stunning beyond measure.
Yeah. And you wonder, God has a sense of humor. You know he does, because we have it, and he created us, and we're in God's image.
Yeah.
And you wonder
if he does funny things in the Bible.
Oh, he does.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you wonder, you got these evolutionists that are fishing around for this whole thing about, we need to find a chromosome that looks like it has this sequence. And who knows if God kind of like, okay, why don't you just go ahead and pick this dumb one here? And because what's really funny about this one, you know, fused sites almost always read on the forward path. This particular so-called fusion site that's really a gene, it's oriented backwards.
It's crucial, and it's going...
It's in the reverse-oriented direction.
Yeah.
It's not in the forward-reading direction. So, hey, there's another whammy, a double whammy by the double helix.
And that's the sense or the positive direction, and then the anti-sense, right? The reverse or the negative, the other side of the DNA double helix. So, Fred, okay, that's another good way of refuting the story back when they didn't have the information.
Well, it completely refutes it, but what's even more cool about this, Gene, in this particular location, there's what's called a binding site, and there's three of them. And a binding site is like a knob on a designed piece of equipment. You know, it changes the function. In this particular case, it may change how much protein is made, you know, for a certain cell type or skin tissue. It controls. It's a control mechanism.
Yes.
It's a control knob. They found three of these control knobs called binding sites right in this same location that they said was these
right
two merged telomeres.
Right in the middle of the alleged fusion site. And, Fred, if you remember, we did a show back 5 years ago on binding sites.
Yeah.
Remember that?
Yeah.
And there was a paper published by the National Institutes of Health on how long it would take to evolve a binding site. And so by mutations, a section on your DNA, and it's where other proteins could, like, where they could dock, where they could attach to, and they attach, and then they do some function.
Yeah.
Typically, that's important.
Yeah, it controls how much is produced or whatever.
So here's what they came up with. Based on human mutation rates and how many particulars need to change in the DNA, they said to evolve a single binding site would take about 100 million years.
Just a single binding site.
About 100 million years. And supposedly we came from apes.
Yeah.
How long ago? About 5 million years ago?
5 to 6 million years ago. Yeah.
And so here on this one gene, we've got three binding sites. You know, what's interesting about that 100 million years? They looked at, well, that's if every step is beneficial.
Yeah.
Every step from some different.
Which is a huge stupid assumption. It is. It's an absurd assumption.
Yeah, because you look at the fitness, and when you mutate a functional binding site or strand of DNA, it's typically neutral or harmful.
Yeah.
So they said, well, what if as you're mutating this binding site, you only lose 5% of the fitness in the intermediary stages? Well, to evolve one binding site for like a fruit fly, it would take 400 million years.
400 million
years. For one binding site. And what's so fun about that, Fred, is they think in 400 million years, the entire insect kingdom evolved, the whole thing, not just one binding site.
Yeah.
And here we have three binding sites in this junk DNA that supposedly was the fusion site.
Yeah, it's amazing how, you know, what the faith that they have, mm-hmm. the blind faith. I mean, ours is intelligent faith.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
But then there's also centromeres. They play a role in this story because what the evolutionists said at the time was that there was the presence of a vestigial, which meant like old and no longer functioning, centromere.
Yeah.
And a centromere, it's like a spindle for the chromosomes during cell division, mitosis. The chromosomes have to keep separated and organized.
Yeah.
And so it's a spindle fiber for the chromosomes to wrap around or, you know, to keep them organized during cell division.
And there should only be one. And so if two of these guys merged together,
right,
you would have two. And that would disrupt the ability for the cell to divide. So evolutionists postulated, well, there must have been a very rapid negative selection to get rid of that one centromere because you can only have one.
Right.
So which is silly. So all of a sudden this thing's going to merge and it won't survive. It won't survive a cell division. So somehow there has to be a lucky mutation and a whole bunch of them.
Right at the moment of the merger.
At that centromere
to take one of the centromeres.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you give a good analogy with, because so they think they found a centromere. That's what they think.
Yeah, a vestigial centromere, something that used to be one.
So you gave an analogy of a murder happening at a party with 100 people. And a witness says that they saw a car fleeing the scene, but they saw that it was a white car, and that was it.
Yeah, that was it. So the investigator jumps into the party, and he asks the first guy he finds, what color car do you drive? Oh, white, sir. You're arrested.
Yeah, you're arrested.
You have a right to remain silent.
Yeah.
You know, that's how silly that would be because, you know, how many other people drive a white car? So the point here is centromeres, that sequence that's associated with a centromere, well, the problem is you find that same sequence all across the chromosome. Mm-hmm. So they're just picking and choosing. They found one they like.
You find that elsewhere in the genome.
Yes.
And not just at centromeres.
Yeah, you don't find that sequence just at centromeres. You find it up and down the chromosome.
Right. So another argument.
Yeah, that one was never a good argument.
So, Fred, I want to thank Dr. Jeffrey Tompkins, geneticist, and Robert Carter.
Absolutely.
For their work. And going and listening to Tompkins in person and reading his papers, he's brilliant.
He is brilliant.
Yeah.
And, you know, this should be published in those secular journals because it's...
should be in the journal Nature.
But they won't because it's...
Journal
you know,
of
it
Molecular Biology. It should be all over there.
It attacks one of their icons of evolution.
Yes.
This, you'll still read about this nonsense in, you know, Wikipedia, and I'm sure they're still teaching it in high school and probably college.
And while I think you and I gave an accurate presentation of his evidence, he's done so much more than we've been able to cover.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I really encourage people, if you're interested, just Google Jeffrey Tompkins, and we'll link to a few of his articles on the topic so you could learn a lot more.
Yeah. So, Bob, what about this magma of the great deep?
Oh, boy, we did that show
a few weeks ago.
Yeah. The Fountains of the Magma of the Great Deep, and we've now made it a YouTube video. Have you seen the video yet,
Fred? I have
seen
the video. It's really good.
You think?
Oh, yeah.
Thanks.
And it's not too long.
No.
You know,
it's about 7 minutes long, and Fred, it takes the audio from the program you and I did on it, as you know, we'll share with the audience, and it just adds visuals to it.
Yeah, visuals. It has the cell phone visual of the presentation that's done at the AIG Creation Museum, a fantastic museum, but they have one display that's not quite right.
Yeah,
and
the fountains of magma, because in Genesis 7:11, it's the fountains of the great deep that caused it to rain for 40 days and 40 nights. Those fountains are water.
Yeah, who in the listening audience would think that the fountains of the great deep that's going to cause it to rain for 40 days and 40 nights
were magma?
Was magma? You know,
nobody.
For years I'd think you just common sense. It's water.
For centuries, for
I bet you most years. People listening don't know that that's what AIG is unfortunately pushing.
That's
is
where they're
magma.
Heading. Yes.
Volcano magma the fountains of the great deep.
And the reason is that if the fountains of the great deep were water, their plate tectonics model does not have reservoirs of water below the crust to provide the water for the fountains.
Their argument just doesn't flow.
It doesn't flow. So we have AIG and CMI in their Creation magazine. They speak of volcanism, and they reference Genesis 7:11. So that ties in with the Creation Museum, and their ARC exhibit has the same basically presentation.
Yeah, the magma coming up from
fountains of magma of the great deep.
From the core.
Yeah. And so what we are pointing out is because they don't have a source for that water, they're subtly changing the impression people get when they read about the fountains of the great deep for people to think it's magma. They're volcanoes.
Yeah.
And it's not magma. It's water, which is just another piece of evidence to show that catastrophic plate tectonics is not true.
It's wrong. Now, I can't emphasize enough that your video on the hydroplate theory, you've got a whole section on just the plate tectonics part of, you know, their theory and why it's wrong. And even if you don't buy into hydroplate theory, you should, but let's say you don't, at least get the video to watch how the catastrophic plate tectonics is not only refuted by scientific evidence, it's refuted by biblical evidence overwhelmingly. Baumgartner, great scientist, he's done a lot of great work. I know he's had really neat stuff on C14 and diamond stuff like that.
Oh yeah, I love the guy.
But yeah, his thing about in order to solve his problem, he needs how many moons to go by the Earth on day four?
Well, that was because plate tectonics, catastrophic plate tectonics, can't erode all the sediments to cover the continents
a mile
deep. So he
needs to create energy somehow.
So somehow you need turbulence on the surface of the Earth far beyond what their global flood would do in order to just erode the rock to get all the sediments. Like the Grand Canyon sediments, they're all over the world. Where do you get all that erosion from? Well, John Baumgartner recognized as a geophysicist, you can't get that erosion. So he posited that a moon-like object orbited the Earth six times, and that orbiting pulled on the floodwaters with so much force that it caused more erosion.
Yeah, and then that moon, I guess, just took off somewhere.
It left.
But, you know, and you made a great point in the video that Henry Morris, the great Henry Morris, said, you know, if you've got start appealing to lots of miracles to make your theory work, it's probably not a good theory.
Not
and that's exactly what Baumgartner is doing. Yeah. He's appealing to unprovable miracles.
Yeah, miracles of convenience.
Yeah.
Not only that moon-like object, but also how did it start? You know, why did the crust start diving into the mantle?
Yeah.
And these claims of a wild temperature differential so that the rock was, you know, 400 degrees colder than the rock around it. And anyway, God does miracles, and he describes the miracles he's done in the Bible. But when you need miracle after miracle after miracle not implied in the Bible to make your model work, that's not a valid form of biblical interpretation or scientific discipline. Because when your scientific theory says, and insert miracle here, and then insert miracle here, there's something wrong.
Yeah, yeah. And again, in the video, you show also how Scripture supports, you know, the hydroplate theory.
There's
it's not just like one verse or two.
That's so many.
There's so many.
And we
that,
list them
that
all
fit.
In this amazing chart.
Yeah.
It's also available online, that chart, at rsr.org/flood. You'll see the spreadsheet of all the Bible verses that seem to specifically support the Fountains of the Great Deep model, the hydroplate theory model. And then we also show the vapor canopy model and the catastrophic plate tectonics model and what verses seem to specifically support those models.
Yeah.
And it's a very revealing chart.
And you can get that at rsr.org, and there's a click on the store.
Yeah.
Hydroplate video.
Oh, for the whole video, yeah.
Yeah, and you can also view it online now, right?
Yes, you could buy it and download it, or you could rent it, stream it.
Yeah.
Or you could watch like 45 minutes of it for free at rsr.org/flood.
Yeah, and if you watch those 45 minutes, you're going to want to watch the rest. It's really good. So I just had an idea.
Yeah.
I know we kind of referred to it a little bit off air before we did the show, but...
Yeah.
But, you know, the tree of the knowledge of good and evil could play into this whole thing, right? It'd be cool to do a show on that.
Oh,
I mean, it's more of a fun topic, and it's more of kind of a,
you think
hey,
we
maybe
do
this,
that?
I think it'd be cool.
Fred, we've been talking about this for 20 years, but not on the air.
We have, and it's when I first read your idea about the tree of the knowledge of good and evil.
Yes.
You were describing stuff. I'm listening to this audio, and I remember I was driving through Wyoming. I can't even remember why. Nobody remembers why they drive through Wyoming. But
sorry to our listeners in Wyoming.
Yeah.
But anyway.
But yeah, and
it's a beautiful state, really.
Yeah, it is. We lived there for 2 months.
I once trashed Mississippi on the air. Big mistake.
Yeah.
We got a lot of listeners in Mississippi.
Hey, Wyoming has a lot of nice things about it. They're the number one gun owner state in the country. That's a big plus.
Right there. They're on top of my list.
Yeah.
And Yellowstone and the Tetons.
Yeah, the Tetons are awesome.
Yeah.
So I'm listening to this audio of the Tree of the Knowledge of Good and Evil. Highly recommend it because you've got it in audio and video.
Yes, we do.
And you're explaining this thing about trees on the side of mountains and all this and that. And I'm like, this is crazy. And all this, you know, really beautiful description of this Garden of Eden. And then afterwards, and you know, this huge tree that's covering the nations. I'm like, and I'm thinking... I don't remember reading that in Genesis.
It's not in the Bible.
So I went and read all of Genesis. Where is this? And I couldn't find it. I found pieces of the story that you were telling on
air. But you couldn't find it.
I couldn't find it. So I had to go back and listen to the video because, you know, you're driving your car and you're missing parts. And
so
you
now,
mentioned where it came from.
Let's not give the punchline. It's not a punchline.
Yeah.
But let's not let the audience know where this comes from.
Because it is in the Bible.
If we're going to do a show on it,
is this one of those radio teasers that, you know,
might
good
as
to
well
do?
Be.
Or have them get the audio because it really is good.
Fred, there's an entire story about whatever happened to the tree of the knowledge of good and evil.
Yeah.
It's in the Bible. There's
it
a
is.
Whole chapter on it.
Yes.
And it is overlooked almost universally.
It is overlooked because, you know, a lot of passages in the Bible really talk about two things at the same time. You know, there's...
Yeah, that's true. There's a dualism.
There's a dualism.
And like the king of Tyre and Lucifer, for example.
Exactly. There's a dualism, and maybe that's all I'll say. That's a clue, though, for our listening audience.
Yeah, so...
Highly recommend you get it, because it was really interesting. And I'm serious. I went through that whole process. I read all of Genesis looking for what you were talking about.
So, obviously, we're now committed. This was an idea 2 minutes ago, but now we got
to
do it.
Yeah, we got to.
Okay, so we'll do a show on the tree of the knowledge of good and evil.
That sounds great.
All right. Well, thank you, Fred. In our video.
And there'll be a science tie-in with that show, by the way. It'll be 90% theology, but about 10% science.
And the video that people could now see, it's really fun, The Fountains of the Magma of the Great Deep. Just go to rsr.org/magma. It's embedded right there. And on YouTube, you will see for the first time ever the new RSR video open. It's 30 seconds long. It was made for our Big Bang video, RSR's list of evidence against the Big Bang.
So it's our new official opening for RSR.
For RSR videos. It's a stunning open, isn't it?
Yep, it really is good.
Yeah, Tommy Stills did a tremendous job on this open. You'll get to see our new open and then the Magma video. And I can't wait to the next program. Fred Williams, thank you so much for another fun show.
Thanks, Bob. It was great.
So this is Bob Enyart and Fred Williams for Real Science Radio. May God bless you.
Intelligent design and DNA. The scholars can't explain it all away. Get ready to be awed by the handiwork of